Take your Bibles, if you will, and turn to 1 Corinthians, once again, verse 9. When I say we're going to get through this message, I don't know how I'm going to get through it, because I have changed it in my head. I've told Rich that I'm going off text, not the scriptural text today, but off my text as I've written it, and I may completely throw out the notes before the message is completely done. But let's trust that the Lord's Word, as it's given us and are faithful to the Word and the exposition of it, that He will remain faithful and will hear what He has to say from it this morning. Will you stand with me, please? 1 Corinthians chapter 9, and just three verses, 15 through 18. But I have made no use of any of these rights, nor am I writing these things to secure any such provision, for I would rather die than have anyone deprive me of my ground for boasting. For if I preach the gospel, that gives me no ground for boasting, for necessity is laid upon me. Woe to me if I do not preach the gospel. For if I do this of my own will, I have a reward. But if not of my own will, I am still entrusted with a stewardship. What then is my reward? That in my preaching I may present the gospel free of charge, so as not to make full use of my right in the gospel. And may the Lord add His blessings to the reading, and you may be seated. Once again, the book of Corinthians is showing itself to be an amazingly complex book for me. Now, when I initially thought I was staying away from complexity, I thought that it would be kind of a good book, kind of straightforward, particular issues that you deal with, and the issue is the issue, and it's a right side, there's a wrong side, and most of us are in between, it seems. But I'm finding more and more that there is an amazing complexity in this book of 1 Corinthians. And so this morning, I thought this was pretty straightforward, just part two. In essence, I didn't call it a part two of last week's message, but it's a continuation of the same thought. And so I thought, well, okay, I know where we're going to go with this. But for the last couple of weeks, the Lord has been just saying there's more to this than what appears on the front of this. There is something that as you study it, you might be able to determine a little something more deep. And so I'm hoping to be able to do that this morning. But once again, when you go off text, other than what you have written, especially if you script your messages, such as what I do, and when you step outside of that script, you get rather dangerous territory. But we're going to do that anyways, I believe, this morning. As I studied the book of 1 Corinthians, I'm finding once again that Paul, we've entitled the entire series, is Grow Up into Who You Actually Are. Grow up and become what we are. And that's what the church is, individual members. Individually, we are people within Christ, and we have an identity in Christ, but we also have an identity as a church. And so Paul's been basically saying all along, and will continue to say for the rest of the chapters, just grow up into that. Become who you are. And so I keep that in mind. I keep coming and coming back to that. I return to that idea as I study the scriptures to say, okay, who are we in these particular passages? And so we began last week to take a look at one of the issues that he was asked to deal with by the Corinthian church, and he is writing them back. But keep in mind in the context that Paul has been saying all about this particular issue about simply paying a pastor is what we think this issue is, and it is, it's here, but it's not the main issue that he's been talking about. It has to do with the church itself and becoming actually who they are. And as I thought about that, once again, divisions were coming into the church. Confusion had been there. There were people on both sides of several issues, and Paul was trying to say, this is how you address those particular issues. And so here we have division that's being caused within a church because of identity issues or liberty issues. People saying, I can do this, I can do that, I will do this, I won't do that. And so everybody was seeming to find their own little corners. They found their ways into these almost altercations, if you will. And that was causing divisions within the church. And so Paul is saying, I'm going to take each one of those issues that you've asked me, plus a couple of others, and I'm going to give you some guidelines to be able to say, how to get rid of this division, how to get rid of factions, how to be unified in the person of Jesus Christ. And so once again, we're finding ourselves now, one of the first issues he's going to be dealing with in particular is this issue of food that has been offered to these idols. And it has all to do with liberty. You fill in the blank. None of us today really eat food that's been offered to idols. I don't think so. I don't think it's a main issue. But it is an issue of liberty. So you fill in the blank. Instead of the idol of eating meat that's been offered to idols, you fill in that blank. Well, Paul also addressed it in the book of Galatians. And if you just flip back to Galatians chapter 5 and verse 13, he kind of gives us a summary, if you will, of that particular passage. And this is what we read. He's talking in the first three, four chapters of Galatians about liberty. Basically, the entire book is. But then he comes to verse 13 of chapter 5. And he basically is going to say, yeah, you have liberty. I've been preaching about this. I've been teaching about it. All things are lawful for you. But there is something that's going to limit it. There is something that liberty is not going to be allowed to engage in. And here's the basis that he gives it in summation in the book of Galatians 5:13. For you were called to freedom, brothers. So therefore you're free in all these particular areas to do those. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for the flesh. But through love, serve one another. And so in essence, what he's saying, exactly what we said last week and the week before, that your liberty, there's three L's here if you like this, got to give John MacArthur credit for this one. Your liberty is limited by love. Okay, three L's. Okay, so your liberty is limited by love. And so that's what he has been saying all along. That is what he's been saying here at the Corinthian church. There are certain conditions, and whatever they may be, whatever these issues of freedom is in your life, you can fill in that blank, whatever it is, there are certain conditions that for the sake of love that you should not participate in, even though you are free to do it. It was this issue of meat. God doesn't care what meat that you eat. That's what he was saying. These idols that you were all concerned about, that were being offered to, there's nothing there. These idols are non-beings, they're non-entities. It's a hunk of wood, it's a hunk of metal, there is nothing there. God himself does not care. He doesn't forbid it. As a matter of fact, he has now opened the way with Peter to be able to eat all kinds of meat. And so, yes, those that are, quote, stronger in their Christianity, are saying, we can eat that. We can eat it. There is nothing wrong in it. There is no other idol. I mean, there's nothing live in that idol. There is no other God, and so we can eat it. And the weaker brother is saying, oh, dude, I've been saved out of that mess. I've been saved out of idolatry. I can't be a part of that. And to see you participating in it, I really struggle. How could you possibly do it? And so Paul's saying, yes, those of you that have liberty in that, which all of you do, even the weaker brother, has liberty to do that. Don't exercise that because of love for those weaker brothers. This basically is what he's been saying. That's the principle of chapter 8 that we had, or at the very end of chapter 8, I think verse 13. Yeah, verse 13. And so now he's going to illustrate this specifically about Paul himself surrendering his rights. He's going to give a personal illustration. He spent the first 14 verses, which we looked at last week, to be able to show that he had a right. He was entitled. Now keep that word in your head, entitled. That is the word that has been coming to me for 2 weeks now as I prepared for this message. He was entitled to something. He was entitled to be paid. He was entitled, and rightfully so, to be given support by those he was ministering to. That the church was required, if he was ministering to them, if he was preaching the gospel, if he was starting this church, he could expect to be paid. There was an entitlement there. And he gave several reasons for last week, if you remember. Several of them, just very quickly to recap. You should pay the minister. You should pay the people that are in charge, those which are ministering to you. Particular with Paul, his first reason was that he was an apostle. He was one who was sent directly by Jesus himself, having seen the resurrected Christ, which was one of the qualifications for an apostle, that he was in fact an apostle. So there was an amazing importance placed upon Paul, is what he was saying. Then he was saying it was human custom. It's just human custom that you pay people that do work for you. He was saying that it was God's Old Testament precedent, that it was God's priest by his own commandment in the Old Testament, that the priest should earn their living by serving in the ministry, by serving the people of God. He said also one of the other reasons was that you've done it before. You've given other people at this Corinthian church, probably Cephas or Peter and Apollos have been able to earn a living from them, but for some reason you don't want to pay me and Barnabas. And so he was using that as an illustration, and his, or not illustration, but reason. And the last reason that he used was that God himself, Jesus Christ, had commanded that you pay the minister. Once again, whether it was looking back to the book of Luke when they went out, when the 70 of them went out two by two, and whether they should earn a living from it, or whether there was a specific revelation given to Paul by Jesus himself, we are not quite sure. But nevertheless, Jesus himself had commanded that you take care of the minister, that they have right of support because of their labor in the Lord. And so now, that we set all that up last week, and we get to verse 12, and he kind of gives us a sense of what he's going to be talking about in verses 15 through 18, but he gives us a sense in verse 12. He says this, "But nevertheless, we have not made use of any of this right." I like the word entitlement, okay? Because you're going to see why here if I really go off script. "We have not made use of this entitlement, but we endure anything rather than put an obstacle in the way of Jesus Christ. I have a right," he says, "but I choose not to use that right for fear of hindering other people, because I may hinder the gospel. And so I choose that I will endure," if you notice that word in ESV, "I will endure anything." It's interesting, that word endure. He basically means that I'll keep my mouth shut. And if it's total deprivation, I will endure that. I will walk through it without complaint. Oh, this hurts personally, this one, okay? I might be able to endure it, but ask Tammy how many times I will endure it in silence. Oh, woe is me. Honey, you won't believe what was said to me today. Okay, but Paul's not saying that. We will endure anything. His particular perspective was there was a sense of denial, of self-denial that he was going to endure, and he does, by the way, for his entire ministry, in essence, and you'll see that here in a little bit. He chooses to work day and night with his hands. He makes tents at night. He may make tents during the day, depending upon when he is given the opportunity to be able to preach. But he does his off time, if you will, working with his hands. Why? Rather than put an obstacle in the way of the gospel of Christ, he says. Now, it's interesting that later on you're going to see that he will accept money, but I believe that one of the reasons he does, and I believe one of the reasons I was asked this question, why do the other apostles accept it? Why have they? The other apostles were basically sent to the Jews. Paul has been sent to the Gentiles. Keep that in mind. He was to take this message to the Gentiles. The Jews knew God's Old Testament rules, that the priests are going to earn their way. I mean, they're going to bring everything into that temple. The priests are going to take what they need after the first fruits are given to the Lord, but there's going to be plenty left over for the priest, and he's going to be able to make a good living at being able to do this. So the Jews understood the need to pay the pastor, the ministers, and the churches that the other apostles were gone to. Paul, however, was not that. He was called not to the Jews, but he was called to the Gentiles to do it. And he says, I don't want to give any reason to anybody in these fledgling areas, these fledgling church, for hindering of the gospel. I don't want anything to oppose it. I don't want it to make it anything difficult for you to accept the gospel. Can you imagine getting somebody saved? And I've seen this, I have to say, not personally, been involved in it, but to try to reach a family, to try to reach a person because of their affluence into a ministry. And I've been a part of something where we were put together by people because of the affluence that that group could have within the church and could have it within the community. It was because that there was money involved. And so the world understands that. The world understands that that may be the only reason that they're my friend is because they want my affluence. They want my money. Well, why should that change with religion? Why should that change with people who don't know Jesus Christ, but you have a message of the gospel? Why should their perspective change in that? I want you to invest with me in Amway. Okay, we're friends. Okay, it's not a pyramid scheme. It's nothing like that. Okay, we're just friends, and I want to come over and talk to you as a friend. When you get over there, and they want to know how big your checkbook actually is to be able to invest in the money. Been there, done that. I sidetracked. That's not part of my script either. But that's the issue that he's talking about here. Is this gospel message that is going out to the Gentiles, is it being looked upon by people in the Gentile community as something that I'm simply trying to get money for? I simply want to earn a living by teaching you some new teaching in this person named Jesus Christ. And so if I teach about him, you can pay me for it. Is that what it is? Paul's saying, you know what? In these Gentile people, they understand it that way. And I don't want to give that opportunity to them. So there's a hindrance to the gospel. Now later, Paul is going to, and I wrestled with this. Later he's going to accept it. You remember last week I read the passage from the Macedonian church. He accepted that money from a very, 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 very destitute and poor church. He accepted their money. He's going to accept the gifts and the money from the Philippian church. So why not here? Well, I think the difference becomes is that you will find that later on in Paul's writings, as the churches mature, as they grow up and they become stronger in the Lord, they understand this issue of giving. And it isn't a fledgling church anymore. I believe that clearly the mark of a mature church, one of the marks of a clear church, of a mature spiritual church, is their heart for giving. That seems to be a mark of a very mature church. Well, they aren't suspect of everything coming around the block. They're prudent with their money, but they're willing to do that. As a matter of fact, I'm just thinking about this totally off script. Boy, there's so much off script today in my head. Many of you are familiar with Keith Richardson. He's been here. He's here for our first baptism that we had in our service. He is now in Kenya. It's amazing how that guy, just on the Lord's leading, he picks up and he goes. He does what the Lord calls him. I don't know of any other man as attuned, at least personally in my life, attuned to the will of God, and the spiritual leading is what he is. And he's in Kenya right now on a trip teaching, I believe, some pastors. And he came across the young lady by the name of Zipporah. And he is asking, just on in the last 2 weeks, he is pleading with people on his Facebook account to help build this woman a home over in Kenya. She has a child. It's a story which I'll put a link on our website for. It's an amazing story, this woman with her child. And I don't remember all of the details, but he has just felt so drawn to this particular woman because she doesn't have anywhere, nowhere to go. And for $1,000, they can build a home for this woman in Kenya. For $5,000, she can have a place that actually is going to withstand anything, including like attacks and I don't know what all he has been explaining. And so he's just putting it out to some friends and churches that may be willing to take offerings up. And so next week, I think I may do that. I think I may give us an opportunity as a church to take up a separate offering to help this young lady by the name of Zipporah. So just keep that in mind. I know we have our harvest offering coming up, but once again, sometimes Spirit just leads differently. And so I want to be able to actually help them out personally, but I think that our church may be able to do that too. But that's a mark of a mature church. The mark of a mature church is to be able to say, we have a heart for giving. And so Paul knew that. Paul knew that he could come back to the church, the Macedonian church, the Philippian church. These were mature Christians. There wasn't great divisions in it. There wasn't squabblings within their church. And they knew they had a heart for giving. And he knew that this wouldn't be a hindrance to their gospel. And so he was able to take it. And I believe that's a reason that you're going to see Paul take it later in his ministry. But now back to verse 15. He's basically saying this, but I have made no use of any of these rights. The same thing that he says in verse 12. Well, what rights is Paul talking about? He's given us several reasons. He's already said all of those reasons, all five or six, however you wanted to put those reasons together. I've given you all of those, and I have not used any of those rights or entitlements that I've talked about. Verse 15 continues, nor am I writing these things to secure any such provisions. Because you know the naysayers, you know the ones that are suspect. I know what Paul's doing. Hey, I'm saying this. Not that I want anything, mind you. So they're saying, well, he's saying that because he wants to say it humbly. He wants to stand behind that and say, oh, you know, I didn't really want anything. But the whole time, personally, he's saying they better be given because I've been showing them how they need to be given and they better be given to me. He wants to make very clear that this is not about me coming in some type of subterfuge, some type of scheme of mine to be able to say, this is what I'm looking for, but I don't really want it. But in reality, I really do. Like many times when we'll hear compliments, you know, many times they'll say that message meant something. That message was an excellent message, and try to say in humility, I appreciate it. And in reality, I'm saying, oh, say it again. Say it again. Okay? Oh, no, it is all of the Lord. Okay? It's all of the Lord. Just I appreciate it, but as long as God's glorified in it. But in reality, I'm saying, hit me up again with that little compliment. Okay? That's what it seems that Paul wants to be very clear. That's not what I'm talking about here. And I want you to know my heart. My heart is I am not looking for anything else. Paul's whole message, his entire world, his entire writings in the New Testament are going to be about the fact that he has always been destitute in ministry. 1 Corinthians chapter 4, we already went over this a couple of months ago. Listen to what he says already. To the present hour, we hunger and thirst. We are poorly dressed and buffeted and homeless. And we labor, working with our own hands. When reviled, we bless. When persecuted, we endure. Up to this very moment, this is what Paul is saying, this very moment, we have been buffeted. We don't even have good change of clothes. And we don't want things to change. I choose to do it this way. 2 Thessalonians 3:8. Paul runs once again. Nor did we eat anyone's bread without paying for it. But with toil and labor we worked night and day that we might not be a burden to any of you. I won't even sit down with you at your home and eat a meal with you without paying for it, for fear of being a burden to the gospel to you. It's Paul. It's from the 2 Corinthians 11:9. And when I was with you and was in need, I did not burden anyone. For the brothers who came from Macedonia supplied my need. So I refrained and will refrain from burdening you in any other way. Talking to this Corinthian church, this affluent church, I'm not going to burden you because the people at Macedonia have been taking care of me. The destitute people, those which don't have two nickels to rub together, are taking care of me. He's been saying this all along. This is how I've chose to live. And this is how I choose to continue to choose to live. I'm in virgin territory. I am bringing the gospel to the Gentiles. And so what's the whole thing? What's the whole heart of this matter we see here in 1 Corinthians 9? Why not take support? For I would rather die, he says in verse 15. For I would rather die than have anyone deprive me of my ground for boasting. Now this is so tough. I honestly believe that I've wrestled with this passage for the last couple of weeks to be able to understand it. For I would rather die than have anyone deprive me of my ground for boasting. He's basically saying here that I am not a prophet for hire. I am not a minister that you can simply pay for whatever you want me to say to do here. I would rather die than my glorifying in certain things, because I may be forced to those outside of what I should be glorifying in. And this is where it gets confusing, because Paul's in the midst of this going to say, I don't want to boast, don't want to have anything to do with that. And then all of a sudden he's going to say, but I have an amazing boasting going on. And that's where it kind of frustrates me. It's like, okay, get to it, Paul. When he talks about this issue of boasting, there's an inside portion of this particular word here. It's, and I'll try to pronounce it in the Greek. Kachima, I believe is how you pronounce it. We find this word 11 times in the New Testament. 11 times we find the word kachima in the New Testament. Now, we have this idea of boasting as braggadocious, don't we? How many of you like people who boast? None of us do. Okay, none of us like it. Okay, well, you have seen how fast my kid ran 40. Okay. Oh, great. Here we go again. Yeah, you ought to have seen how far he threw that touchdown, man. Oh, great. Well, you ought to have seen how much money I made in stocks this week. Okay, let's hear about it. You know the boasters, that's braggadocious, and we don't like that. But the word kachima in Greek, actually 5 out of the 11 times, is actually the same word that is interpreted, if you will, rejoicing. Instead of simply this braggadocious idea, it is a sense of rejoicing. It's a sense of thrill. It's not really a brag, but it's saying that there is something that I am absolutely thrilled about and rejoicing in. That's their boasting idea. It softens the word for us to be able to understand. It isn't this idea that I'm just going to stand up here and I'm going to just polish the brass a little bit. No, it's not that idea. He's talking about there's something about ministry that I find that I can absolutely rejoice in. I can revel in this. It thrills me. Verse 16 tells us what it isn't. Once again, he wants to tell us what it isn't again. Come on, Paul, let's get to it. What is it? For I preach the gospel, for if I preach the gospel, that gives me no ground for rejoicing, for boasting. If I preach the gospel, there is no ground for my boasting and rejoicing in that. Now, this is Paul saying this. This is where I really struggled all week. This is Paul who is saying this, that I really can't rejoice and I really can't boast in the fact that I can simply preach the gospel. Why, Paul? Isn't it your preaching? Isn't it your ability to be able to just to simply stand up and preach the gospel that you can boast in and you can rejoice in? He says, no, for necessity it's laid upon me. Woe to me if I don't preach the gospel. He's saying, no, I don't have a choice in this matter. It isn't the message that I can rejoice in. It isn't this idea that I can simply preach. There's something else. I can't help but preach. If there was anything else I could do in life, I would be doing it, including killing Christians. I mean, think about it. Isn't that where Paul came from? I mean, Paul's on the road to Damascus to kill Christians, doing what he wants to do at that particular time. God comes along, slaps him upside the head, down he goes, blinded, seeing God, and says, what am I supposed to do now? And he says, why are you persecuting me, Paul? I got something better for you to do. And so he is compelled to do that. That's why he says in verse 17, for I do this not of my own will. If I do this simply because I want to do it, then I already have the reward. But if not of my own will, I'm still entrusted with a stewardship. Even if I want to do this, I can't boast in it. If I don't want to do it, God himself still said, here's a stewardship. Here's something that you're going to do. Paul says in Galatians chapter 1, even from his mother's womb, even before he was born, this was decided for him. So what kind of boasting, what kind of rejoicing is Paul going to say that I can have simply in the fact that I'm doing what I have to do? God has called me to do this. I have nothing to personally rejoice in. I heard a story this week about a guy by the name of Ramon Llull. And this comes from MacArthur also in some of his writings. He was a Spanish Christian years ago. He said he was living a careless, luxurious, and pleasure-loving life. And then he had a vision of Christ that came to him. He said Christ basically came to him and says, carry my cross. And in that vision he said, no, I'm a careless, fun-loving, luxurious, living person. No, I don't want to carry that cross. The vision came to him a second time. Same thing. No, don't want to do it. Pushes him away. The vision comes a third time. Now, the third time in his vision, he sees Christ come to him. And this time, he hands him the cross, and Christ leaves. And he said, what else can I do? And so the picture here in this guy's life was, what else can I do? I don't have a choice. Christ appears to me in my vision. Now, once again, we can discuss this whole issue of vision later on if you want to. But Christ appears to him, gives him the cross, and by mandate, he doesn't have an opportunity because Christ has left, and the only one left to carry the cross is this Ramon Llull. That's what Paul is saying here. I have no super joy in ministry simply because I am preaching the gospel. He's saying something else. There's a part of ministry. There's a part of Paul in here. Now, it's not independent of God. It's not independent of the Holy Spirit's leading. As a matter of fact, it's with the cooperation of the Holy Spirit. But there is something that I, Paul, personally can share in here that I can rejoice in. It's not the mandate that God has given me simply to preach, simply to boast in the ministry. Think about that. Think about pastors that exalt themselves. Think about churches that exalt their preacher. If they're in it for that, they're doing exactly what they have to do. They don't have a choice. If there's nobody sitting here this particular week, I'll preach to Tammy. Hopefully she's here. Okay? But that's the point. If we're exalting in the fact that I'm simply called to preach and I'm somehow glorifying in it, there's nothing to glorify in. God has called me to preach. He's called pastors to preach, to minister. So there's no glorying in that. So once again, we're back. What is the reward then, Paul? This is synonymous with boasting. This is synonymous with being thrilled about things. Look at verse 18. What then is my reward? That in my preaching I may present the gospel free of charge. Now you see where he's been going with this entire chapter at this particular point. He has been saying, I am entitled. You are entitled to eat meat. You are entitled to fill in the blank in your personal lives. Paul's only personal expression here, Paul's only illustration that he can say is, I can do one thing. I'm entitled to take support from you. I'm entitled for you to pay me. But my joy and my boasting and my thrill comes up here, the fact that I give up my right to being paid, and I want to present this gospel to you free of charge. I'm giving up what I'm entitled to because I love you. That's what he's been saying all along. Your liberty is limited by love. And Paul's liberty to be paid by these people was limited by his love for these people and the love for the gospel. That's what Paul's been saying all along in all of these chapters thus far. He could have preached for money, but he chose to preach for nothing. His attitude is, I have the liberty. I have the liberty to stand up here and say, yep, I want to be paid, but I'm going to give up that liberty. Just like our attitude on many things. I have a right to go into this place. I have a right to go into this particular place that I know Joe struggles with at the church with me going in, and I know he's going to see me going in there. I have a right to go in there, but I want to joyfully give up that right to be able to go into it for the gospel's sake so that he can become a stronger Christian. I have a right to enjoy whatever this is, whatever habit I may have, whatever it may be. I have a right to do that, and you do. The scriptures are saying, absolutely, you have a right to do that. But our rights become restricted by the love that we have for other people, and that's what Paul's saying. The only thing that I can rejoice in is my ability to be able to stand in front of you and say that I preach free of charge. I preach the gospel to you free of charge. If we really come to that particular point where we want to love the world, where we want to win people to Jesus, you know, there may be some liberties that we have to give up. If we truly want weaker brothers and sisters in the Lord to grow up, there may be liberties that we have to give up instead of hoping they find another church. I mean, because that's really easy the way out, right? Hey, Lord, just lead them to somewhere that they're happy. Therefore, I don't have to give up my lifestyle. I don't have to be no longer the stumbling block in their lives. That's what he's saying all along here. Oh, maybe they could just go find that other church. I know they'd be happier over there, Lord. And in reality, why don't we seek what Paul sought? And Paul was seeking an amazing joy, an amazing thrill in his life to be able to say, I put my liberty on hold. I put my entitlement on hold because I love these people so dearly that I won't exercise it. That's what he's saying here. That becomes what grips us. That's Paul's particular point. He's going to end it in 1 Timothy 5:17, the last of his letters. This church has grown up in it. He's going to talk. He is going to simply say to these, you better be paying your pastor well. That's why he's going to write Timothy and Titus, the two letters. The last thing Paul's going to write, he's going to write to these well-documented churches, these ones that have grown up, and he says, your elders, those preaching and those teaching and those ones that are ministering and laboring among you, they're worthy of a double honor. But as for me, don't take my joy away. Don't take the joy away that I have to be able to stand up here and to present the gospel free of charge to you. It is the one liberty that I can give up for you to show my love for you. And this is really where I'm going to go off script. You remember I said the word entitlement. I've been reading something recently, and once again I was reading it, and I shouldn't do this just before you walk into the pulpit. But this whole idea of entitlement, have we become a society absolutely racked with entitlement or what? Everywhere you turn around in America today, we're entitled to something. I don't have 4G on my phone. My data is so low. I can't get it to come in quick enough. I was on a train ride yesterday, and I couldn't get my cell phone to work going up through the Oil City Valley. And I was entitled to that thing to work right in my life. I mean, turn on the TV today. How many entitlements are you going to see today? How many riots are you going to see in the street? How many shootings are we going to see in the street? Because somebody was entitled to something. It's entitlement attitude that we have in our lives today. Now, granted, as human beings, we have certain unalienable basic rights and entitlements given to us. God has given us certain things, but they're really limited, folks. And so we have, because of government and because of a nation that gives us other rights, we want to really rally around all of these things. We can only function in a society where there are certain inalienable rights. If there are certain rights aren't given to us, our society isn't going to be able to function. But we have taken this to an amazing degree. And that was the church at Corinth. This church at Corinth had become so entitled that they did not want, and I found this out reading some history, that they did not want Paul to be paid well because they wanted Paul to stay in their home. It was a badge of honor. It was a sense of almost royalty for you to have the great speakers and the orators of the day to be able to stay with you in their house because you have the money to be able to put them up because they're poor folk, but they're great at what they actually do. It became a status symbol. You were entitled to keep him in your house. Hey, I got more money than the rest of you, so when Paul's here, Paul's staying with me. That's why Paul's arguing one of these things. This is one of the points that he's been arguing about this. This is why you want to keep me and Barnabas poor, because Peter isn't that good of a speaker. I'm just going to make an assumption here. I'm probably going to answer for that in eternity when Peter says, I was just as good as Paul. Okay, baby. Okay? But that's the sense that we get. Paul's the best, and I want him to stay in my house, and I'm entitled to have him here. And so what you see the entire book thus far is this issue of entitlement. I'm entitled to my wisdom. I'm entitled to divorce my unbelieving husband or my unbelieving wife. I'm entitled to deprive my wife or my husband of certain things in my marriage. He's been talking about this all along. I'm entitled to all of these things. And that's the problem, I believe, with America today, and I submit to you the problem with the church today. We believe that we're entitled to so many things. But I want us to understand something. With entitlements comes an amazing chain of bondage. Because if I'm entitled not to be lied to by the government, somebody should be punished for the lie. If I'm entitled not to be cheated, then the laws better be so set up that my entitlement, when it's infringed upon, also puts a punishment on the other side. And so think about it. Every entitlement that we're given has to have a restriction placed on the other side of it. The only way for a society and the only way for a people to truly live by entitlements is so that both sides are always equal. Can we live that way? Dave, you spoke harshly to me this week. I'm entitled to you not to speak harshly to me. So elders, we want to meet after church because Dave spoke harshly to me and we're going to see to it that he's punished for that. Now, Dave didn't speak harshly to me at all. I'm making this story up. But can you imagine this? Tammy? Oh, I'm entitled to a hot meal. And I had two all week. Elders, we need to meet. Because my wife did not have hot meals, which I was entitled to. And then she comes back in with her whole list, saying, okay, you guess what I was entitled to? He didn't meet any of these. Can you imagine us living in a life, in a society, in a culture, in churches, this particular way where it's all about entitlements? It's all what I feel that I've given a right to. And I believe this is what Paul is ultimately going to be speaking to here. Who was the one person in all of creation entitled to whatever he wanted? Jesus Christ. And guess what he did? He comes, he dies on a cross for you and I. At the one moment when he could say, I'm entitled to call all of my angels right now and get me off of this cross. What did he do? He stays on the cross. He gives up all what he was entitled to for you and I. And I believe that is what Paul really is speaking about here when he says, I want to give you a gospel that is free of charge. Everything you've been working for, every bit of your education that you've been putting in for years, and you think you're entitled to a good wage because of all the education, guess what? The gospel is free of charge. You take it. You don't have to work for it. If you think this is what's going to satisfy you, if you think that by my entitlement, by me getting this, my happiness is guaranteed, my future is guaranteed, he's saying there is one thing that guarantees entitlement. There is one thing that guarantees my enrichment. There is one thing that guarantees my satisfaction, and it's the gospel of Jesus Christ, and don't you dare take that away from me that I want to present this to you free of charge. That's what he is saying here. And that is why we need to step back away from our entitlements. Oh, I'm free to do this. I'm free to eat that meat. I'm free to take that drink. I'm free to say these words. I'm free to watch that television. I'm free to participate in the Instagram this particular way. I'm free to do all of this. But I give it up because I love you too much, Jesus. I love the people that are going to be offended by this too much. And I want to be a person that can give the gospel free of charge to understand there is no entitlement in my life. That's what he's saying. That's exactly what he's been saying here all along. And we will stand continually on my entitlement. I'm entitled not to be this busy. Oh, I don't want to get started. But that's what I see in the scriptures. It's all about us. What is there? What is it that Paul has that he's able to say, I want off of the director chair. I want off of this director chair that I am sitting in that the entire universe revolves around me and my entitlements and what I'm expected to be able to be given. What is it that's going to kick Paul off of that director's chair? You know what it is? The ability to give the gospel free of charge, to hear Jesus walk in to the courtroom, to hear Jesus walk into the marketplace, to hear Jesus walk into the halls of academia and says, you think that's what's going to satisfy you? Take it. It's free because here's the gospel. This is what sets you free. That's what he's saying. That's what he's been saying. That's why he's saying to the church, there's no reason for the division. There's no reason for the factions. It's all about unity. It ain't about you. It ain't about me. It is about me getting off that director's chair. The fact that I'm in the center of my universe and this whole thing revolves around me. It did revolve around Jesus Christ. And he gave up his entitlement. What can you and I do any less?